Hi everyone, and wish you all a very good afternoon. So welcome to this month's session on Azure What's Brewing. Okay, and I'm Manindrajit Bindra, Senior Technical Evangelist with Microsoft. So in this month's session of Azure What's Brewing, we'll go through some of the key features and updates which have been announced related to Azure services. So yeah, this is a post lunch session, so I'll try and keep it the monologue short. I think the first announcement of which I'm personally really excited about is the Azure SQL data warehouse being generally available. So for those of you who've used the service, you will know that what an awesome service it is, and it's a MPP architecture data warehouse, which is like a massively parallel processing data warehouse, which can process terabytes of data in a few seconds. And there are other cloud-based data warehouses, but SQL data warehouse has some unique features. For instance, normally not many data warehouses consider storage and compute independently, but with SQL data warehouse, you can control the compute and the storage separately. So for instance, if you're not processing any data in your data warehouse, you could just pause the compute, which would mean that you will not be charged for compute and you can just pay for the storage. When you think of it in terms of the cost benefit, that could be just could be huge. Several other features are there, and it easily integrates with Azure Data Factory. So for instance, if you want to get in data from your transactional data source, say a MySQL database, or you can easily use the Azure Data Factory, it integrates seamlessly. Similarly, it integrates with machine learning for predictive analysis, Power BI for business intelligence, HD Insight for big data insights, even with R and Spark for big data analytics. So yeah, these are just some of the features. It's really an awesome product. Okay, second one is so we spoke about Azure Data Factory just briefly in the first announcement, and Azure Data Factory, you can think of it like a integration service in the cloud. So we've got connectors for various sources and various destinations. So which could be on cloud or on premise. We spoke about MySQL, but it could really be anything. We've got tons of connectors, and constantly the number of connectors is being added. So using Data Factory pipelines, you can ingest data from various sources. And what this announcement deals with is we now have connectors for Apache Cassandra and Salesforce. So Apache Cassandra is, as you know, one of the most popular NoSQL databases with almost linear scaling. So we've now got connectors for both of them, and plenty of others, on the way, constantly connectors are being added. So always encrypted is again now generally available in Azure SQL databases. So in some use cases wherein you wanted, so for instance, say social security number, you wanted that to be encrypted in your database, but you did not want the encryption keys to be present or stored in the SQL in your database server, right? So now you with we had that when always encrypted was even in preview, and what happened was that with only at the point of use, the client drivers, it was decrypted and encrypted, so no keys was stored in the database server itself. And this feature, I mean after a lot of testing, it's now generally available. Moving on to the next one, premium messaging is also now generally available in the regions which you should be able to see on the slide. So in general, with the service bus queues, we had a lot of options and, you know, a lot of features. So if you needed, you know, order delivery, duplicate message detection, those kinds of features, you use service bus queues. And even with the standard, you had all these. With the premium tier, we got a lot of other options, you know, ability to scale up and scale down. And so basically that was the demand, and we've seen a lot of people using it, and now it's finally generally available. Okay, so next one is, yeah, one of my favorite ones. So Windows Server containers on available on Azure Container Service. This feature is now in private preview. Yeah, and so basically containers, since they've been around, so containers, Docker containers, they've transformed the way in which we build, ship, and run our applications over the last few years. Now, as I said, Docker has been leading this transformation. And due to the basic container principles, where we share the kernel with the host, you can bring up containers in seconds as compared to VMs, and you can also pack in more containers for the same physical hardware, right? Also, the way they are portable, since the way you define the Docker containers. Now, this technology was available on Linux hosts for the last, I think, 3-4 years, and more recently on Windows Server containers. We had Docker available on Windows Server. So basically, Windows, you could have Windows containers, which again shared the kernel of the Windows Server. Okay, and this was done in conjunction with Docker. For production workloads, however, a single Docker host will not do. And that's where we had Docker orchestration mechanisms. And on Azure, we had the Azure Container Service, which was earlier available for Linux containers. Right? We had two orchestration options, using Docker Swarm or using DCOS or Mesosphere. Right? And now with this release in private preview, we have Windows Server containers on Azure Container Service. And in this case, the orchestration engine for now is only Docker Swarm orchestration, right? So yeah, this is available in private preview. Just a second. Moving on to the next slide. So we were talking about the orchestration options with, you know, Azure Container Service, and you know, and we've now got Windows Server containers. So however, if you want, you know, if you want to see, you know, the Docker universal control plane, Docker also has an offering on the Azure Marketplace, which is the Docker Data Center. So again, you can orchestrate your service, your Docker containers using this. I think there's a 1 month free license as well to evaluate this for if you want to evaluate it. Okay, the next one, basically, earlier, if you wanted to see the usage across multiple Azure subscriptions, you know, we had the APIs available. I think sometime a year or so back, we had the rate card APIs and the Azure resource consumption APIs. But it was, you had to do some, work if you wanted to find out the resource usage and prices of consumed amount for the different subscriptions. And with this open source portal being available, you have that information. Once you've deployed this, you can go ahead and you'll start seeing this information across various subscription. You can visualize the billing information, right? You can also track it over time to see the trends. I'm just going through some of the questions. Just a second. Okay. So the next one, as you know, if you attended the, I think, last one or before that, the Azure What's Brewing session. The toolkit for IntelliJ was already generally available during that time, and now the toolkit for Eclipse is also generally available. So you get a lot of options with this. So if you are, like, for instance, if you're a Spark developer, you can develop applications. You can submit Spark applications to SD Insight using this add-in. You can allow users to stop a running Spark application before its completion. You can test and validate different Spark applications locally. So all these features, which were which were needed earlier on Eclipse, were not available. Now you can do all of those. You can, cache the Spark logs to disk as well. So a lot of these features available. Okay, the next one was this one was requested. I mean, we've had feedback regarding this for a long time. So as we know that Azure web apps, not just for .NET based applications, but you can use Azure web apps for Java applications, for Node.js, for Python, yeah, for PHP applications. And when it came to the ease of management for Java applications, you just select the run tab, the Java version, so Java 1.8, and just select the container version, so say Tomcat 8.0, and then you're good to go. You can link the web app to your code repository, or you can, FTP if you wish to. And so it was all great, but the when you were working with Visual Studio with, say, .NET web application, debugging was very, very simple. You could just debug this app deployed on a web app very easily. And this is the feature which was requested for a long time, right? And now with both Eclipse and IntelliJ, with the wizard available, you can just debug through using that Azure item, and then you just debug as Azure web app. And even if you go with the default ports, you will directly be able to debug your web application. You'll hit those breakpoints. So it's like, this is a really, really cool feature. Yeah, so you should try that out. Okay, so there is a question. Could you go into the details briefing of containers and Docker? So what we'll do is we'll go through these, and then maybe in that time, I could like I've got a 2 hour session which I take on Docker, so it's a big topic. So if you can be more specific what you want me to speak about on Docker and containers, so towards the end we'll try and answer that question, Kuldeep. The next one is we now have much more simpler Azure management libraries for Java. So yeah, earlier again we got the feedback that it was a lot, it was very complex to even do simple things using the Java management libraries. Yeah, and so that's why we've tried to make it easier. And now if you look at it, you know, if you want to create a VM, you could just do it in one line. So you can just do you know, azure.virtualmachines.define, and in the definition you add, give it the name, the region, your resource group, your network characteristics, and the image you want, and then you could just do a dot create. So this dot config, and I mean sorry, it was dot define and then dot create, and it will create the VM for you with the defined configuration. So it's that simple now. Similarly, other things have also been made really simple. Yeah. So the Azure Storage Node.js SDK is now generally available. So this has been available for a long time and it worked pretty well till we fine tuned a few things, and it's there on npm. So you could just do npm install and get this SDK. So then you'll have samples. You have samples also, whether it be for blobs or queues or tables or your file store, you can directly access them via APIs, right? These Node.js APIs as well. So this SDK is now generally available. Yeah, this was like for a really old version of the API. So we were going to deprecate it, but we've, you know, postponed that to allow for a few customers to update to the later version. So yeah, again a general availability announcement for Azure Security Center. So yeah, it basically Azure Security Center, it provides visibility, you know, into the security of your current configurations and your Azure resources. You can control and monitor the security configurations, and internally, you know, it makes use of advanced analytics, you know, using machine learning and Microsoft's vast global threat intelligence services. In the preview phase also, you know, we detected thousands of, you know, attempts, attacks, and corresponding recommendations were provided to the customers. So yeah, even in while it was in preview, we had a lot of good feedback about it and a lot of people used it. And so finally it's generally available now. And the main advantage is like it dramatically reduces the threat detection and the response times to, you know, to defend against those attacks. Okay, so this is this next announcement, it's related to one we made a month or so back. So Azure Diagnostic Logs can now be streamed to Event Hubs. So earlier you had to do a workaround, maybe go through a blob and then to Event Hub. But now you directly have the options, if you have with VMs starting now, to stream these diagnostic logs to Event Hubs. Going forward, this will be available for other services in the next few months, including app services. Yeah, and so if you think of it, you know, if you got existing applications you're using to then analyze these logs, right? And or a SaaS product, so you can use then this streaming to Event Hubs to eventually push these logs to those systems, right? So that will become really easy. Earlier you would have to do, you know, some workaround. So there was some work involved there. So I think this one is so we already had a lot of these POP locations in India, Australia. So POP stands for point of presence. These are also called as edge locations. So basically, if you're using a CDN, right? These CDNs are you know, edge nodes closer to within ISPs. So basically, if you're accessing your server is hosted in say USA or Southeast Asia, and you are delivering your content through a content delivery network, then in all probability, even with our local ISPs in India, they will have some edge nodes or POP nodes in India, right? So if two users from the same locality going through the same ISP are accessing that same content, so say an image, after the first request, it will be cached on the edge node. So the second person from that same locality going through the same ISP will not need to go to the end server. It will directly pick it up from the POP location or the point of presence or edge location. So that's how CDNs work. Now with what this release is that for Azure Media Services customers, right, who are already who are integrated with CDN, right, these point of presence locations will immediately come into action, right? Because so if a customer in India is those fragments, those media fragments which have been delivered through Azure Media Services, they will be cached in these new point of presence locations as well. Okay. So as I said, these are now enabled for Azure Media Services streaming endpoints. I think those are the main ones, the main announcements, updates for this month. Okay then, thank you guys. I'll repeat it. It's my Twitter handle is Mani MANI S Bindra BINDRA. Thanks a lot.